I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Today we agreed, in addition to the measures that were I announced after the last National Cabinet meeting, to pause direct passenger flights between India and Australia until the 15th of May.
Last Tuesday, with news of daily death tolls rising in India due to an uncontrolled and widespread COVID-19 outbreak, the Australian government announced it would immediately suspend all passenger flights from India. At the time, Prime Minister Scott Morrison was quick to defend the move.
I don't see this as a problem that we're trying to solve. I see this as a group of people we're trying to help. I don't see those Australians of Indian heritage as a problem we have to solve, not at all. And I'm concerned that that's how some may have been seeing this. No, these are Australians and Australian residents who need our help, and we intend to ensure that we are able to restore.
But then, late on Friday, news broke that the government would introduce penalties, including fines and 5 years jail time, for anyone who tries to return home to Australia from India, with the penalties starting on Monday. This historic move, which leaves more than 9,000 Australian citizens temporarily stranded, has baffled many. Morrison is facing criticism even from within his own government.
I'm talking about Matt Canavan, the LNP Senator for Queensland. One, do you support the ban on people coming back from India?
No, I don't. There's Australians who are stranded in another country, and I think we have an obligation to help Australians in distress.
Others have questioned why the US and the UK did not face similar bans, despite having higher case numbers during their respective COVID peaks. But over the past few days, the government has held firm.
So they're temporary. They'll be reviewed on the 15th of May, but they're designed, based on the medical advice, to keep Australians safe.
With Treasurer Josh Frydenberg rejecting suggestions that this is irresponsible.
Last question. The Australian passport mean nothing now that there are 9,000 Australians. You effectively said there's no mercy flights home. You are stuck in a country that is ravaged with coronavirus.
This is a temporary measure.
Both Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne and Prime Minister Scott Morrison have also faced allegations that this decision is racist.
Absolutely not, in any way.
Now, India, I've spent the morning and most of late last week defending your position in relation to this, and all I pick up and read over the course of the weekend is you're racist, your government's racist, and everyone else is racist. Can you elaborate on why you're not racist?
Because this is about health. I mean, the same accusations were made against the government over a year ago when we closed the borders to mainland China, and that was one of the most important decisions we made as a government.
But then on Tuesday, speaking on the Today Show...
PM, good morning to you. Do you have blood on your hands?
Wake up. No, that's obviously absurd.
The Prime Minister appeared to take a different tone entirely.
Jailing and fining returning Aussies. As a sitting Prime Minister... it's incredibly heartless.
Well, Carl, as I've said, I think the likelihood of anything like that occurring is pretty much zero.
As he seemed to signal a shift in how the government would be enforcing the law.
So we have had a shift. There is no doubt about that. I think most Australians...
No, Carl, we haven't had a shift. How you're reporting it is a shift.
I'm sorry. Didn't you have a press conference over the weekend where you stipulated that...
So... how is this policy impacting Australia's Indian community? And how do they feel about the motivations behind this ban? It's Wednesday, the 5th of May. Krishma, can you tell me a bit about yourself and how you felt when you heard about these harsh penalties on travel from India? Karishma Luthria is a freelance audio producer.
I'm not an Australian citizen. I've been in Australia for 5 years, though. I work here. I live here. I had a lot of my first here, my first job, my first long-term boyfriend, my first nephew. A lot of my good, happy firsts have been in Australia. And I found out about this ban when I was at work. And so I kind of compartmentalized it as, okay, I'm in my journalist, research, reporter capacity. it's fine, just right. But I got home and I started sort of mulling over these thoughts, and it was just clearer now more than ever that if Australian citizens can't come in, then someone like my mum definitely can't, and I don't think I'll see her for a long time.
That's tough. Can you tell me a little bit about your mum? Where is she right now?
My mum is in Mumbai, India at the moment. She is trying her best, going day by day, and we FaceTime her every day. I speak to her as often as I can, and we talk about the most mundane things to the most interesting things, but it's the only way I can kind of feel better that she is by herself during this crisis.
Can you tell me about the rest of your family? I mean, who is where?
I'm the third child. I have two elder sisters. So the elder sister is with me in Sydney, and my second sister is in New York. My dad came to Australia when COVID first hit, and so he's been here since then. And my mum was supposed to come a few days after, but by that time the borders had just closed and she was too scared to fly. So she was like, I'll come in a bit when it starts to go down a little bit. But that time never came and hasn't yet come.
Can you tell me what it's been like throughout the pandemic, knowing your mum is overseas? What's that been like so far?
Of late, Australia's been in this sort of successful bubble of containing the virus. But India suddenly has erupted. And this second wave has really hit me in so much complexity that I just didn't expect it to. Like, the first day I found out that we hit 300,000 cases, I was at work. I saw the 300,000 cases. I compartmentalized it, got home, was sitting in bed. And I was just like, it hit me like a wave. I was just like, oh, shit, like this is 300,000 cases. It's not a joke. It's a matter of time before every Indian gets it. And what about my mom? Mm. And so it's just been these little moments. Every time we pass a milestone, that same thought comes back to me. And I'm constantly just worried about her all the time.
Is she safe? What are her days like lately?
So we're really privileged for my mom to be able to kind of socially distance in our home, be safe in our home, and just be contained in that place by herself. Though emotionally, being alone, it's really hard. It's not fun seeing the rest of your family live restriction-free in a different country, being away from them while you're unable to move, you're unable to do anything because of this. And she also has a few like comorbidities. And so we're just always constantly like telling her, don't go anywhere, stay at home, especially right now. Like, we want you to be safe. You are our priority.
Does she listen to that?
Yeah. Initially, a few days ago, she didn't. And we all just were like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You told me off when I went to work. Now I'm telling you off. And so sometimes it's like reverse parenting is happening.
How did your mum react when she heard about this policy? Obviously, it affects her if she's hoping to come here at some point.
I think that she didn't have a big reaction. We're all kind of used to this by now. We tried applying for her to come here late last year, saying, you know, she's by herself, most of her family is here. But that exemption didn't get through. We were rejected pretty much the next day. So I think even though we are all trying to hold on to the hope that someday she might be able to come here and be safe as we are, it might not happen. Because there are still thousands of citizens stuck in India at the moment who are in the same position as my mother. And if they can't come home, then someone like my mom is probably at the very bottom of that list.
You've been speaking to one Australian citizen who is in India right now. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, well, I spoke to Subra Somayajula, who moved to Australia when he was 21, pretty much around the same age as I did.
Hi there, how are you?
Hi, good, how are you? Because he is in India at the moment, the recording quality is sometimes not great. Can you hear me?
Yes, Karishma, how are you?
Good, how are you? He's an Australian citizen, but grew up in India, in Hyderabad.
I moved to Australia in 2004, just like a lot of us in my generation, to pursue higher studies, higher education.
He lives in Sydney and has a wife. Mm. As with so many Indians in Australia, Subra has had so many of his important moments here, just like me.
So my first job, my first car, I met my wife in Australia. So pretty much my whole life and my home is Australia.
So he feels really Australian. But one thing listeners should know is that when he applied for his Australian citizenship, he had to give up his Indian citizenship.
India doesn't allow for dual citizenship. So essentially you have to give up Indian citizenship in order to become an Australian citizen, yes.
How hard was the decision to give up your Indian citizenship?
Personally, I did not really have to think twice to actually become an Australian citizen when I took the citizenship. Because of my love for cricket and the fact that some of my extended family, my father's sisters, lived there.
And he got a travel exemption after multiple attempts at applying for one in about March this year. Mm. And he got the exemption so that he could go home and take care of his only surviving parent, his mum, who is suffering from stage 4 cancer.
She's at the end of her life, so I needed to be here. Just to, you know, take care of her before she goes and also perform all the rituals, being the, you know, only and the eldest son.
Tell me about his time in India with his mum.
He says the reality of the day-to-day is pretty much reflected by the news reports, videos, interviews that we're seeing and hearing.
So what you're essentially seeing in the news, you know, kind of reflects what's actually happening here on the ground.
It's also really hard for him to find care for his mother at a time like this where hospitals are overwhelmed by huge amounts of people seeking out oxygen and the basics to get through COVID. He can't get her in hospital to deal with issues related to her cancer.
So a couple of weeks ago, she was unwell, so I had to take her to the hospital. Ideally, I would have liked to have admitted her there. Medical staff pretty much said, no, you can't. All the beds are reserved for critically ill patients.
He's also really nervous about spending time in hospitals with the doctors and COVID patients around him because of that fear of her or him getting COVID.
Mm.
If his mother dies of COVID, he won't be able to see her body or have a proper funeral for her because they're just burning people in mass funeral pyre sites.
You don't even get to see their dead body. You kind of get their ashes in return.
And if he gets critically ill with COVID, his family here in Australia won't be able to see him. We don't know for how long.
My home and my wife is back in Sydney. And if, for example, if today I fall sick and I need to try and source something, there's quite literally no one that will be able to help me.
I mean, throughout this past year, we've interviewed people in Australia about being separated from family by state borders and having dying relatives that they were afraid they wouldn't be able to get to say goodbye to properly. I mean, this is just a whole nother level, this level of destruction and separation that we're seeing at the moment, right?
When it's thousands of kilometres and miles away, it's almost as if you just don't know. The uncertainty is so much that it takes over every single day, every single moment of your life.
It feels indefinite. Like the government said, hey, we'll take a look at it in a couple of weeks' time. But like, where is the government's duty of care towards its citizens?
Next, the toll of separation and the question of citizenship. Karishma, Subra says that he feels that Australia is failing in its duty of care. What do you think about that?
for someone like me who is here on a visa, I have always felt the government doesn't owe me a duty of care, whether it's from arranging private health insurance or in trying to access job seeker or keeper during the pandemic. But the fact that Australians cannot access help when they need it most just because they're not within Australia's borders at the moment, it's honestly very shocking.
The reality is, just the forecast pretty much everywhere is today is telling us that the cases apparently haven't even spiked in India.
He did seem afraid because all predictions show that cases have not yet spiked in India. The worst is yet to come.
You know, what's going to happen 2 weeks' time when everything, starts to fall apart?
I think that's what he's afraid of, that eventually it's going to get so bad. And the fact that the government is not being clear enough about what's going to happen next, that he's just going to be there for just an uncertain amount of time. But he's still tethered to India at the moment because even if borders open, he says he won't rush to return until his mother passes away. So he's kind of stretched in two directions. His family in Australia who want to see him so desperately, but his only surviving parent in India who needs him right now and who, if he doesn't stay back for the passing off, he's going to regret it.
Mm.
So it's a really stark reality for Subra at the moment.
Yeah, what does that mean for him, being an Australian citizen who's given up his Indian citizenship but is there right now in this crisis?
He says he feels like he's in a no man's land. Mm. The situation is that the Indian government just doesn't have the capacity to support them. Neither does the Indian health system. And now with this travel ban, it feels as though the Australian government doesn't support Australians stranded in India either.
Mm. My citizenship is pretty much worthless because I can be prosecuted and penalized for wanting to return to Australia. That's actually quite hard to take.
The US in its latest health alert asked citizens to leave India as soon as possible in the safest way possible and that additional flight options are available for them. While British and Irish nationals and third country nationals with residence rights in the UK could also come back home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of confusing when the Australian government is like leaving Australians to fend for themselves.
Like there's no other country that did what Australia did. It's one thing to close borders until they try and find a solution to bring people back safely. It's another thing to actually say you can't return, and if you do, you're a criminal.
And how does it feel being an Australian citizen but not being allowed to enter your own country?
For the first time since I moved to Australia, whether it's to study, I know everyone has different experiences. I've always felt like I am part of the society. I've always felt that I've contributed well to the society for the betterment of the country. And I've always had positive experiences, and that's why I built my life there. But for the first time, I actually feel that maybe it was a wrong decision to actually have moved there.
Does it make you feel less Australian?
Absolutely, it does.
How does his family feel? How does he feel being separated from them?
He says it's tiring. He has to deal with it on a day-by-day basis.
It's hard to explain in words because it's a wave of emotions. You know, some days it is okay, some days it isn't.
He has to check in with his wife as well. He calms her down during her frequent worries about when he's going to be back home.
Just taking care of my wife's mental health and telling her, and actually making her promise every single day that, I'll definitely return one day and I'll come back and see her.
He's also often too stressed to sleep between managing all these scenarios in his life, his wife, his mother, his work.
I can barely sleep for, 4 to 5 hours any day.
And so it just seems incredibly hard for him right now.
I mean, both Maurice Payne and the Prime Minister were asked if this decision was motivated by racism, if racism had anything to do with this. Is that belief something that you've heard about, that people believe is behind this government decision?
Well, Subra said that he has never felt discriminated against in Australia until now. And Australia needs to do more to help all of its people.
We need to stop, being driven by fear, essentially. Let's just come together as, one people and figure out a way forward.
But the fact that there's a bias in Australian society is not new. Just hearing people talk about the virus in India versus the virus in places like the US and the UK is just the fact that people will say, oh, damn India, how come they're not controlling this crisis? Meanwhile, when they're talking about countries like the US and the UK, they'll feel bad about it. They'll say, oh, it's so scary what's happening there. I hope people will be okay. So for me as an Indian, when I hear that, it's kind of shocking that people think that way and have these little biases in the way they think about a country's handling of a virus that's literally crumbling every inch of that country.
It's not 9,000 people, it's 9,000 families. It's 9,000 families that are stuck here, that are stuck, right? How long before you start to hear that someone wanted to return and they couldn't and they actually died here? How many of us are going to die while we are waiting to return back home?
So have you spoken to your mum recently, and what is her reaction to the latest news?
She only just came across the article recently, so I think she's surprised by it. But I'm going to speak to her soon. It's actually the morning there right now. She must have just woken up. So I'm going to speak to her after this and just check in and see how she's doing.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks. Can you tell me, can we talk again about the article that you saw? What did you see?
The article says Australians coming from India to Australia will be arrested. They'll be fined a huge amount or something like that. Because they're coming back. I mean, I don't know.
What do you think it means for us, though?
For us?
Yeah, like you and me.
I feel very hopeful that I'm going to see you soon, but I feel afraid that I will not see my children soon enough. That is very disheartening for me.
And we want to see you too.
I know you want to see me, so it's so difficult and it's... I'm just being hopeful, and hope is all we have right now. I just want to be reunited with my family, see my children.
I love you, Mom.
Love you, Karishma. Don't go away.
I'll call you soon, and I hope I see you soon.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop recording now.
Karishma.
On Tuesday afternoon, it was revealed that the majority of the lower house crossbench had written to the Prime Minister asking him to end the India travel ban, as they believe it sets a dangerous precedent of barring Australian citizens from the right to return home. They also called for the government to repatriate Australians in India and to urgently utilise current surge capacity in quarantine, plus establish further federal quarantine facilities. You can find the latest on the outbreak in India and the Australian government's response at theguardian.com. That's it for today. Thanks to Karishma's mum, Preethi, and Subra for their time. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert, Joe Koning, and Karishma Luthria. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.